I'm Michael Lippin, and this is Voice of America's VOA China 360, a weekly podcast looking at how China influences the rest of the world and how China is influenced by the world. This week, China takes a major step forward in its space program, sending its second space lab, Tiangong 2, into orbit around the Earth. A Chinese rocket, the Long March 2F, blasted the lab into space from the Jiuquan Satellite Launch Center in northwestern China on September 15th. 3 days later, Chinese state media said Tiangong 2 was in good condition as it orbited the Earth on a test track at a distance of 380 kilometers. Next month, China plans to send two astronauts into space on its Shenzhou 11 spacecraft to connect with Tiangong 2 and spend 30 days in the lab, conducting scientific experiments. Andrew Jones is a journalist covering China's space program for GB Times in Finland. He says there is a bigger objective behind the Tiangong 2 and Shenzhou 11 missions.
Now, these are necessary for long-term stays in space, which is what the Chinese are aiming for by building a Chinese space station with the first main module, which will be much bigger than this Tiangong 2 module, going up in 2018 and completing it by the mid-2020s with three modules and also kind of like a Chinese version of the Hubble telescope as well.
Jones says China also is moving ahead with plans for lunar exploration.
Next year, they will attempt to go to the moon and bring back some samples with a robotic lander. If all of this comes together and they can succeed in building a super heavy lift rocket like the Saturn V, which took American astronauts to the moon in the 60s and 70s, if they can do this, then the next step after that is going to be sending Chinese astronauts to land on the moon. So this isn't a stated goal. There's nothing officially approved, but some figures inside the Chinese space program are talking more openly about this as a potential goal, and the capabilities that they're developing point towards this becoming a reality in, say, the next 10, 15 years.
Even sooner than that, China is preparing a Mars mission in 2020, hoping to be only the second nation after the U.S. to successfully land a rover on the Red Planet. So what has been driving China's ambitions in space? Initially, says Jones, the driving force was the Chinese military.
When China started its space activities back in the Cold War, it was very much a military-run operation for military means, pretty much like the U.S. and the Soviet Union in the beginning. But China realized after the devastating Cultural Revolution that always going to be behind unless they start focusing on the very kind of cutting edge areas of technology and exploration and so on.
Jones says that realization led China to start a human spaceflight program in 1992, modeled on what the United States had begun decades earlier.
When China decided to embark on a human spaceflight program, they had studied the Apollo program a lot. And they looked at factors like what benefits the U.S. got out of this in terms of science and technology, in terms of boosting STEM education and capabilities, in terms of how it affected the economy, and also politically, the soft power and so on. So they looked at all of these kinds of things, and they decided, human spaceflight program, while very expensive and also very dangerous, is something that could really pay off.
U.S. space agency NASA's Apollo program sent the first humans to the moon, making six landings between 1969 and 1972. The educational impact of those landings is what especially interested China, says planetary scientist Pascal Li of the California-based Mars Institute.
The biggest benefit of the Apollo program was not the return of lunar rocks, which is what it did in practice. The biggest benefit was the fact that it bred a whole generation of younger scientists and engineers who then went into these cutting-edge fields and are now the foundation of an economic boom in the United States. So this is actually well documented. You see a spike in people enrolling in graduate programs in science and technology, engineering and math, when there is an exciting space program like the Apollo program was at the time in the country. And so China is experiencing just that. The nation is enthralled by this effort for China to catch up and go into space. And the biggest benefit really is the fact that there's a new generation of young scientists, technologists, engineers, and mathematicians rising in China.
Li says those Chinese scientists are helping their nation to realize space milestones much faster than the U.S. or Russia.
I think it would be dangerous for any existing spacefaring nation to sort of poo-poo China's advances at this time in space, because sure, you know, the Russians have put a rover on the moon, you know, four or five decades ago, when China just achieved that 2 years ago. Launching of a space station is something that we've done since the mid-70s. Landing a rover on Mars like China plans to do in 2020 is something we achieved 4 decades ago. It wasn't a rover at the time, but it was still a successful landing on Mars. But the point is not that. The 40 years of difference in particular space achievements is something that can easily be wiped out by political change and history and time. And so the idea that China would be in a position to send people to Mars on a similar time frame as NASA is envisaging it is not at all impossible.
Another factor motivating China to rapidly expand its own space program is a U.S. ban on Chinese access to the International Space Station, a U.S. policy that Li calls a double-edged sword.
China, for example, wanted to be part of the International Space Station, and the European Space Agency, which is a major partner on the space station, was strongly behind that, was supportive of that. The United States essentially vetoed that because Congress vetoed that. And the fear is that China might acquire technology and know-how from rubbing shoulders with the United States and the space station program. And that was viewed as being something that would not serve the interests of the United States. But the other edge of the sword is that when you exclude a partner, a potential partner like this, you also give it free rein to try to establish alliances of its own, to invest in technologies that it would have otherwise not acquired on its own, and to essentially become even potentially a stronger competitor. So I think excluding China from the United States perspective is sort of might have a short-term benefit, but it's really being outrun at this point, from my perspective, by the drawback, which is the fact that China and other space agencies now are working together. The United States might find itself more and more alone in what it's doing in space.
NASA Administrator Charles Bolden appears to be trying to avoid that scenario. In May, Bolden said he wants to cooperate more closely with China and urged Congress to change the law to allow NASA to do that. The Mars Institute's Li believes NASA should go even further.
What NASA, from my perspective, would need to do is to further extend the use of the space station program, even beyond 2024, which is the current deadline, beyond even the threat of Russia to pull out of the space station by 2024, and also to lead a coalition of nations to go to Mars. My hope is that by the time the goal is achieved, it will be done internationally and in partnership with China, and that we will view China as we've been viewing Russians lately, which is as partners in space more than competitors. For me personally, as a scientist and as a human being, from my perspective, the space exploration is sort of the more the merrier type of thing. The more humanity focuses on advancing the space frontier, the better off we will be ultimately as a human species.
How realistic do you think is the possibility of a joint U.S.-Chinese mission to Mars? Share your opinions on Twitter at VOAChina360 and on my Facebook profile, Michael.Lippin, as well as on YouTube at youtube.com/mlippin and on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/VOA-English. I also invite you to listen to this podcast on iTunes. Just do a search for VOAChina360 and subscribe. Well, that's it for me for this time. I'll be back next week with another VOA China 360. Hope you can join me then.